opening up a subcommittee of the Joint Ways and Means Education Subcommittee for a discussion on Senate Bill 5529, and hoping that now that on television throughout the building we've started, that some of our colleagues will be here in due time, because class has started. Very important lecture today. And for that lecture, or the discussion, I'm going to turn it over to the esteemed Mr. Steve Bender from Legislative Fiscal to talk about Oregon Health Sciences University and Senate Bill 5529. Mr. Bender.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Today is the first of 3 days that you have scheduled for a work session on the OHSU budget bill, which is Senate Bill, as the Chair said, it is Senate Bill 5529. The expectation is that you will not be taking any votes on this budget bill today, but that rather this would be a day for you to get an understanding of the budgetary issues, to ask questions that you may have about OHSU and its budget in general, and then the expectation would be that tomorrow there would actually be a work session in which you would hopefully be able to pass on a budget recommendation to your colleagues on the full committee. There are three items, essentially, that I've distributed to you today, and I've contacted your staffs to ask them to make sure that you brought your presentation notebooks in, and it looks like everyone has done that, which is very good, because we will be looking at some of those items as well.
I'm filing a workers' compensation claim, Mr. Bender and Mr. Chair, carrying these notebooks around. I'm just putting you on notice.
We've distributed three items today for you, which I will be referring to as we go through this discussion of OHSU. And the three items are, first of all, a rather thick item that starts off with a couple of yellow pages. It starts off with a memo, which is the LFO recommendation on the Senate Bill 5529 for you. So we'll be going through that. Then there are two additional items that I've distributed. Both of them are one-page sheets that are not stapled to anything else. One is a one-page sheet in blue and yellow. It's titled Post-Secondary Education Overview. And the other is a single-page sheet that's titled OHSU Program Expansion Costs per Student. I know it's been quite some time since you had your public hearing on the OHSU budget, so I'd like, if I may, just to spend a very brief amount of time to talk to you about how the institution operates and what the state's role is in the financial operations of the Oregon Health and Science University. First of all, OHSU is organized as a public corporation. It is not considered a state agency such as Department of Education or Department of Higher Education or the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. It operates and has a separate board, which is approved by the Senate and which approves its budget. So the legislature does not at any point approve the budget of OHSU. Instead, what you do approve is support that the state provides for the institution's operations, both in the form of general fund and in the form of tobacco master settlement account funds. As you know, the state receives money under the tobacco master settlement agreement, and the state uses some of these funds in support of OHSU.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Bender. Part of that's right, and most of it's right, but OHSU considers itself a state agency for purposes of claiming sovereign immunity. So while they're a public corporation, they still get to claim sovereign immunity under the Oregon Tort Claims Act because they consider themselves also a state agency, because they get about 3-4% of their budget coming from us. Would that be accurate?
That would be accurate, Senator. In legal terms, the issue of whether OHSU operates as an agency of the state is somewhat different than the budgetary terms in which I was discussing this. In the budget sense, they are not a state agency because the legislature does not approve their budget. For all of these other bills that you have, these are actual budgets that you're approving for particular agencies. Senate Bill 5529 is not an approval of a particular budget. Instead, it represents support that the state is providing. So you are correct. In the legal sense, it is more complex than it is in the budgetary sense to which I was speaking, and I should have made that clear.
Well, thank you. I just want to make sure, because I know we do have one freshman member with us, and I didn't know if Representative Edwards was aware of that distinction. And that is a huge distinction for legal purposes, but in terms of the budget, you're right. We don't get to approve our budget. And we had that long discussion last legislative session. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
If you have your presentation binders with you, I would ask you to briefly open up to a page that's behind tab 2 in those binders. And the page number is page 8 behind tab 2. This page contains two charts on it. And I'd just like to briefly talk about the top chart, chart 15, which is on page 8, which is a pie chart that shows for the current fiscal year the sources of revenues for OHSU. Most of these revenues are outside of the state budget, and the primary source of revenue for OHSU are the payments that it receives for the care that it provides to patients in its hospitals and clinics. The state portion, which in this particular pie chart is shown in blue, is shown in green, is the 2.9%, and that is the portion that we're talking about here. There's a history of the state appropriation that's shown in chart 16, but essentially what the state is doing is it's providing state appropriation dollars to support very specific programs within the OHSU operation. And in order to discuss those or just show what that is, I ask you to go back to the packet here that starts off with the yellow pages and to turn to page 4, which is the back side of the last yellow page in that packet. And what this chart indicates or describes is how the state support dollars, both general fund and tobacco master settlement fund monies, are distributed to OHSU in the current biennium and as proposed in various scenarios in the upcoming biennium. If I would just ask you to look at the current biennium, which is the left-hand column, you can see that a total in this current biennium, which is almost over, the state's providing a bit over $73 million in general fund support to assist particular OHSU activities. And the apportionment of that $73 million is shown in the rows above. You can see that the largest recipient in terms of components that we see funding is the School of Medicine at about $29 million. The School of Dentistry receives about School of Nursing receives about $15 million. The School of Dentistry receives about $12.5 million. The Child Development and Rehabilitation Center, which we can talk about in more detail, receives about $9.7 million. The Office of Rural Health and the Area Health Education Center's programs are receiving about $4.2 million. And the Oregon Poison Center is receiving about $2.7 million. That adds up to the $73 million, roughly, that the state provided in general fund this biennium for OHSU. In addition, in the row below that, you can see the largest single component would be not in the form of general fund, but in the form of the Tobacco Master Settlement Funds of approximately $32 million, Tobacco Master Settlement Funds.
Can I ask a question here?
Senator Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Bender, how much longer will we have money in the Tobacco Master Settlement? Because I know we spent it like drunken sailors in the 03 special sessions or 01 special sessions when we were down in the dumps. I think it was 03.
I will try to get more information on that for you tomorrow. The state has used or has dedicated a portion of these funds to pay debt service for various bonds that have been issued. In fact, for OHSU, the $32 million represents debt service on $200 million of bonds that were issued in the 01 and the 03 legislative sessions to support the state's contribution to the Oregon Opportunity Program at OHSU. The Oregon Opportunity, we also have a student aid program called the Oregon Opportunity Grant that OSAC administers. This is not that. This is a program of OHSU to expand its capacity in research in biomedical sciences, and also to expand, in some instances, activities in rural health outside of the Portland area. This does represent debt service, therefore, of $32 million. I will try to get more information as to how much additional tobacco master settlement funds we now have, in addition to all the debt service that is committed.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Bender. The reason I am concerned about that is I want to know what we're facing next biennium, because if we don't have that money, where are we getting this kind of money from? So I just kind of like to know before it hits me in the face.
Good point. Senator Walker, thank you. Senator Morse.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the $32 million is inclusive or additive to the $73 million?
It is additive to, in the state budget, it's other funds as opposed to general fund, because
right.
the tobacco master settlement funds are not a part of the state general fund. OHSU, by the way, never actually receives these dollars. These do not go to them. Instead, the state pays the debt service directly from these funds on the bonds that were issued on behalf of this OHSU program. The $73 million is transferred directly to OHSU and becomes part of their revenues that they use to help support these various programs.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Bender, maybe we could get some more inquiries about the tobacco settlement, but my understanding is when we issued these bonds, we used tobacco settlement dollars. We also, of course, committed, in a sense, tobacco settlement dollars when we issued the $450 million in bonds at the end of the 03 biennium, which was basically to keep us in the black during the 03 biennium. The combination of those two depleted the money we would get from the settlement to a small amount that would actually be available for distribution. And now the question is, I think we're still pretty secure now, but we're spending money now. I know we make a number of appropriations to the AG to basically defend our position with the tobacco settlement against parties that want to reduce their payments under the tobacco settlement, basically. So that's my understanding of where we're at. It's still outgoing, but there are people that obviously are paying that want to actually reduce the amount that they're paying. That's why we've actually appropriated, I think, we've done some in E-Board recently, and we've done some in here to basically pay AG's costs.
These do represent bonds that were issued. There are general obligation bonds of the state. If the tobacco master settlement funds are not available, we would have to find some other source of funds to pay that debt service for the remaining term of the bonds, which I believe were issued on a 20-year basis when they were originally issued. If there aren't any questions, what I would like to do next is to go to the one-page sheet that's titled Post-Secondary Education Overview, and the one page that you have is page 3, but it's the only page that I've distributed here today. What this shows is it shows a comparison of the co-chair's budget and the governor's budget for OHSU and the recommendation. Because we budget for OHSU as a public corporation, the budgeting is in essence rather simple from the state's point of view, in that we do not, for example, project what employee costs would be and budget for those and project for various particular elements. Instead, what the state does is it provides payments to OHSU, and throughout the state budget, the adjustment for these special payments, which are payments to entities outside of the state government, in the central budget level is given a simple inflation rate. And for the 07-09 budget development, that inflation rate was 3.1%. So the central budget level in total for OHSU's general fund portion is 3.1% higher than the 05-07 biennium amount. OHSU gets a very small portion of their total funding from the state, and the state essentially expects them to use other revenues in order to maintain existing programs with a 3.1% increase in state support this biennium compared to the last. When you go to this page and you look at all the numbers here, all of these in both the co-chairs and the governor's columns represent funding for initiatives to expand current services above the essential budget level. And if you look at this chart, you can see that the difference between the two budgets is about $7.67 million, where the governor's budget is larger than the amount in the co-chair's budget. But I'd like to just talk about these funding programs in terms of the School of Medicine, School of Nursing, AHEC, and the School of Dentistry. Because, again, if you go back to the page on the yellow sheet, the chart that we have been looking at on the yellow sheet, what this shows in the final column, the third to the last column, that's our LFO recommendation, which is reflective of the co-chair's budget that you see on this page. So there's a consistency there, and you can see that some of the programs have no increases over the central budget level, but that in total, the School of Medicine has in the co-chair's budget about $5,273,000 in enhancements above the essential budget level. The School of Nursing has almost $5.6 million in enhancements above the essential budget level. And the Area Health Education Centers program has $80,000 above the essential budget level. So if we go to the School of Medicine and look in the co-chair's column on this sheet again, we can see what those components are that add up to $5,273,000. And there are basically two components that are funded in the co-chair's budget. The first is the co-chair's budget includes $4.12 million to reimburse OHSU for an expansion of its MD class. Those are the students who are earning a Doctor of Medicine degree. It is only one of the many degree programs that the School of Medicine offers, but this is the professional degree that practitioners, people who want to practice medicine, would be taking. The class size has varied from year to year. It had reached the level of slightly over 108 in that range. This past fall, OHSU increased the program size, the class size, to 120 students and requested funds in order to maintain that level of class size. The amount of funds that was requested was $4,120,000, and the co-chair's budget would accommodate that, as did the governor's budget. This is one-time funding, and the institution is not asking for any funding in future biennia in order to maintain the 120 class size in the MD program. The MD program is a four-year program, so when this is fully phased in, there would be 480 students in the School of Medicine that are in the MD degree program. The other item that's included in the co-chair's budget and the LFO recommendation is an item to increase to 75% the in-state enrollment in the Doctor of Medicine degree program. That is included in the co-chair's budget for that is $1,153,000. This was not included in the governor's budget. However, this was the amount that OHSU requested in order to fund a 75% in-state, which is an Oregon resident enrollment in the MD degree program. When OHSU did the financials of expanding its program to 120 students, in order to make this pencil out and in order for this to work in a way where after the current biennium there would be no cost to the state, they would be able to self-finance it through tuition and other revenues that are available to them, they assumed that they would operate the program at about 50% Oregon students and 50% out-of-state students in the MD program. The significance of this is that the tuition rate for out-of-state students is higher. It's approximately $10,000 or so per year higher for the out-of-state students. And when they were looking at the financials to see if there would be enough money, they needed to essentially have 60 of these 120 students paying the extra $10,000 in order to make everything work out. The co-chairs have included this item so that it would still work out for OHSU to fund the expansion and to maintain it without future general fund support after this biennium, even though the number of students or the proportion of students paying this extra $10,000 out-of-state tuition would only be 25% of the total instead of 50% of the total. So this would, the $1.15 million, the impact of this would be that the university would enroll approximately 90 Oregon resident students in each MD class as opposed to the 60 that they would otherwise have done without this. The total of those two is the $5.273 million in the co-chair's budget. Compared to the governor's budget, there is one item that is not included. The governor also funded $7.1 million approximately to further expand the MD class size from 120 students per year to 160 students per year. And that was not included in the co-chair's budget, although the governor did include that. If there aren't any questions about the School of Medicine, let me go on to the School of Nursing.
Senator Stark, thank you. The question I have is, as far as from your perspective, the information you've been given, there's not going to be an issue for OHSU to attract the 90 in-state students for the MD program. They've got, they're turning away more applicants than they have spots. I just want to make sure that that's not going to create a problem.
Yes,
situation.
That is my understanding, and they're waving their heads yes, too.
Okay.
But there are a sufficient number of qualified Oregon resident students to fill the 90 slots.
Very good. Thank you.
Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before we go on through the rest of the budget, I'd like to go back and explore further the assumptions that go into the crafting of services that are provided to non-state government employees in determining the essential budget level. And if, in fact, the assumption is a 3.1% increase per biennium, for the 07-09 biennium, how does that differ from the essential budget level assumptions for state-employed programs?
It is essentially calculated in an entirely different manner. In essence, for the state agencies, if you broadly break the costs of operating a state agency into personnel costs and everything else, and that's an oversimplification, but if you break it into those two major categories, the way the essential budget level operates for personnel is on an employee-by-employee basis, the essential budget level calculates how much it's expected to cost to fund the compensation of each employee, assuming that there are no increases in salary levels or changes essentially in the cost for benefit levels. So what we do is we essentially, in the broadest sense, look at what it's costing to pay the employees of a particular agency at the end of the current biennium and make calculations to estimate what that would be, and then carry that forward for 24 months. And this isn't simplification, but this is essentially what you're doing. To the extent that there are any salary increases that will be negotiated, those funds are appropriated to the emergency board. And if the salary increases are approved and the emergency board finds that those costs are accruing, the emergency board would then appropriate or allocate the salary increase funds sometime during the interim. For the non-state programs, again, typically for large portions of these costs, some inflation factor is applied. For basic services and supply costs. For specific components of services and supply costs where we know that for some reason that we know what the cost is going to be and we know that it's going to be different than what a regular inflation rate would be, we can make adjustments and typically would for those as well. A big one that you see in many budgets are state government service charges. Other things might be rent, facility rent. If we know there's a change there, we can do that. But that's the way the essential budget level is calculated. The state budget does not view the concept behind the state budget and how we fund support OHSU is that we are not making an attempt to pay or to even calculate what all of their personnel costs and non-personnel costs are going to be. Instead, we are providing support for particular programs in order to achieve particular outcomes that would not have occurred if the state did not support these programs. For example, if the state withdrew all of its support for these schools, they would basically have to operate as a private institution, as a private medical college, a private nursing school. They would have to make some changes in how they operate and tuition and that sort of thing in order to continue to operate. So we simply make the adjustment that we do for all other non-state payments to non-state entities. It's very similar to how it's done for the community colleges. Not the agency, but the actual 17 colleges, which are also not state agencies. And it varies from biennium to biennium. There have been biennia where there was no change. The essential budget level was considered to be exactly equal to what it was last time, and that there wasn't even an adjustment for inflation. But over time, the legislature has approved giving inflation in the EBL, and that is what was done in the budget development this time.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair, we can pick this discussion up later, but it's kind of a foundational issue for me as we're talking now forward going into these budgets. If we were looking at this as a state agency, what would be the percentage increase that you would calculate that would be incorporated in that essential budget level?
I cannot answer that question because I do not have the information that we would have used in order to calculate the essential budget for OHSU if it were a state agency. Again, because there is not a strict formula that's applied to each agency. It's done on an agency-by-agency basis. So in some cases, there'll be different increases in employment costs than in others.
Can you give me, Mr. Chair, for this discussion? For example, let's take the Oregon Department of Education, which is entirely a state agency. Can you give us an idea of what that essential budget level increase would be?
Let's see. That's not one of my budgets. I may want to switch to one that I'm doing.
The one that can do. I feel why I'm wanting to have this discussion is because it seems like, and it's not just this budget, but in every budget where the state contracts, essentially contracts for services with non-state employees, that they are treated so substantially different than state employees that what we are doing is incrementally over time disinvesting in the ability of these contracted services to remain viable by virtue of these assumptions that, in fact,
implementation rate, including all costs of providing services, was 1.55% per year, would seem to me to be on the low side. And it would be much different than it would be if we were factoring as a state agency.
Senator, I ask your indulgence to let me get back with your question tomorrow. I simply have not brought the materials that I would need to give you an accurate answer today, but I will be able to give you that tomorrow. I might also add that in terms of what the institution is indicating that it can do with the funding, it is not requesting additional funds over the essential budget level as we calculate it in order to maintain its existing programs.
Well, I would like to have this discussion continue, Mr. Chair, particularly with respect to community colleges. If the assumption is 3.1% for community colleges as well, I'm not sure that that's an accurate reflection of their needs. So I'll stop my questioning.
Okay.
And, you know, but this is an issue I would like to pursue in the future.
All right. Yeah, and we will pursue it further.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Bender, on the yellow page, the last page, the page where you're showing roll-ups.
Yes.
And it shows 75% MD class residency max. And you have 1847, and then you have the number that the 1153, which is the number the co-chairs are adding, and then you're showing an 0911, or 2009, I'm sorry, roll up to $3 million. Would that be the approximate, basically, I wouldn't really call it a subsidy, but the differential between residency and non-resident tuition?
Yes, that would be the amount when it fully phases in and the institution is enrolling 4 years of medical students at 50%, at 75% Oregon resident, as opposed to 4 years at 50%.
And a future roll-up after that would only be dependent upon what the actual difference is in tuition. Would that be between the two?
Essentially, about, yes.
Yes, okay. Now, a very difficult question. Something the co-chairs did not fund.
Yes.
The increase from 120 to 160 students. Do you have any idea what the roll-up might be on that in a future biennium?
Yes, I do. And the roll-up for that is, and I would ask you to look now at this one sheet that we're distributing that we haven't started looking at yet, which is labeled OHSU Program Expansion Costs per Student. The reason why I'm asking you to look at this is this actually answers your question. oh, that you don't have that? Let me see. I have an extra.
Here's an extra. Let's see. Too many papers in the legislature.
Okay.
Okay.
Anyway. The purpose of this was primarily, this chart was primarily to look at the cost effectiveness of these various program expansions and their costs. But as a side to that, it does have a response, Senator Devlin and members, to your particular question. Because in this particular case, what we're looking at are the various program expansions and trying to see how they compare in cost to the existing programs. But if you look at the last row, and talks about the expansion of the MD program from 120 to 160, the amount of biennial state support in there indicates what it is after it's totally phased in. That is the request of the institution. So again, there are some initial costs. They requested some initial costs to implement the increase in terms of needing additional facilities and having one-time costs that would have equaled the $7 million this time around. $7,094,000. But when it's fully phased in, the two-year cost would be $5.5 million on an ongoing basis. And for all of these, when I tried to calculate what the cost was per student, I always looked at the ongoing cost to see if in the long term what the cost of this program is compared to existing programs. And we can get back to this later if you want, if you don't want to look at it further right now. But that is the answer, okay. And that's why I refer to it.
May I ask additional clarification
sure.
on this? Not really understanding what you're saying here, Mr. Binder. So am I correct in assuming that if the program, the training of physicians is increased from 120 to 160, after the additional or the initial $7 million investment is made, which I understand has something to do with facilities costs.
I believe so. You're just setting things up.
Yeah. Then from then on, to increase the training from 120 to 160 is a $5.5 million per biennium roll-up, which actually gives you a lower cost per student than the increasing to 120 students. Is that, am I getting
not this? Exactly. And that's okay. Like, I apologize because this chart really isn't, is a little confusing and probably not put together as well as I should have. Instead of looking at the 120 for now, if you look instead at the existing enrollment, these are the numbers from OHSU's capitation model, and they are here in your book, and we can refer to them if needed. But the amount of state support for the MD program that OHSU allocates for their MD degree program currently is about $22.7 million per biennium. It's not all of the $28.9 million that we provide OHSU for the School of Medicine, because some of that goes to support some of the other programs outside of the MD degree. But they are allocating $22.7 million, and currently there are 253 resident students in the MD degree program. I took a simple division of the two to get a ratio. I basically took the biennial support, cut it in half, so it was a bit over $11 million per year, and divided the $11 million by 253. And this is the same number that OHSU shows in their capitation model, that per student per year, the state is providing support of just about $45,000 per year.
Okay.
I would just briefly ask you to skip over the next two rows and go directly to the final row. What the final row is saying is that OHSU is indicating that they're now at 120. Presumably, if you approve the co-chair's recommendation, they would be able to maintain 120. Then if you look at further expanding it from 120 to 160, the cost per resident student, this is assuming that half the students would be residents in this additional four, out of this additional 40 per year. If you think about it, 40 per year for 4 years, that means the enrollment in the school would be 160 greater, and half of those would be Oregon residents, so I have 80 as the resident FTE. If you do the division then, it's about $35,000 per student instead of $45,000. So the cost of these incremental students, OHSU would achieve economies of scale, and by the way that they're planning to do it on a rotation basis, it would be less than the existing cost. Now if I could try to explain the expansion to 120 and the funding, this is more complicated, because in the long term, again, as I believe I indicated, OHSU is requesting no state, additional state support at all to maintain the 120 enrollment. So actually, the second to the bottom line is the line that's consistent with everything else, and that shows that for the 24 additional students that they would be enrolling, there's no cost, additional cost to the state. The row above that, which maybe shouldn't have been in this table at all, just looks at the $4.1 million that they're asking for in one-time funding and says, well, in one-time funding, how much is that per student? And that shows 86.
I don't like that one.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Jensen.
Thank you.
I'm recognizing without your laptop. I'm sorry.
Oh,
there it is. All right.
It's here. This agency doesn't get enough money from us that I could convince them to send the stuff to me by email or sort of thing. If they got more money, they would have provided me all of the email. You'll excuse me, Mr. Bender, you kind of half lost me, or maybe all lost me on this. It reminded me of a shell game here of some sort. When I come up and got an addition of 24 students and I get a zero cost involved, I am sure in light of that they, you know, we would be well off to ask them to, you know, raise it by 100 students if we can do that for each 24. So help me out a little bit, you know, with this. Would you please? I'm sorry that I didn't quite follow that.
Yes. When OHSU initially looked at expanding its class size to 120, and they've done this, it's already 120 for this year, they looked at the financials and looked at the increase in tuition revenue over what they were currently getting from the additional students, which would be 24 additional resident students and 24 additional non-resident students. And they also looked at general increases in tuition based on rate increases of about 4%.
Okay.
And this showed that this increase in tuition more than covered the costs of the maintaining the 120 student class size, except that there were some startup costs that would not be recovered in the long run. Their calculations did not show, however, that they could further expand the class size to 160 and maintain that by tuition alone.
Are you suggesting then we have a declining curve here, whether it's straight line or whether it is, has some curve in it, as we go beyond a certain point, or we've reached a kind of diminishing return sort of thing?
Yes, and I believe that people from the university can respond in more detail, but essentially it's a capacity issue.
I understand, and that's fine. I'm clear with you. No, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate you.
Sure. May I ask a question?
Representative Moore.
I'm curious if it can be demonstrated that you can raise the class size to 160 students for an initial investment of $7 million that would enable you for, I would assume, in perpetuity to turn out more doctors at a less cost per doctor. But why did the co-chairs choose not to do this, not to make this investment?
I believe that it was looking at the funds that were available to the state budget and all the different competing needs. That it was just they found other priorities that they felt were more important to fund than this expansion from 120 to 160. The fact that the cost is less than the existing cost does mean that this would be that it is less expensive to per student to educate these students than the ones we have already, but they did not feel in their determination of the state's budget needs that we essentially had the funds to finance that, and that there were other demands on the state that had a higher calling.
Well, that's definitely a value judgment.
I have a question that's about the $4.1 million, but it's a different kind of question. First time on Ways and Means. So this money was already spent, and we're reimbursing. And I'm just wondering how unusual that is. Does it set some kind of precedent so that if some of us are here next time, we're going to have other folks saying, oh, yeah, well, we already spent, and we've already done X, Y, and Z. You just need to reimburse us. I mean, is that, how unusual is that, what are the ramifications of that?
I think it is unusual. I don't know if it's unprecedented. But certainly the concerns that you have about this setting a precedent and giving other claimants to state funds a incentive to basically make program expansions and then request the funds afterwards is legitimate. I do think if you asked OHSU, they would say that they were trying to figure out what they could do in order to expand their program. But I do think that your concerns are certainly legitimate and something that would probably be a good point of discussion of your this subcommittee.
Okay, we're ready to vote it out?
No, sorry.
You want a motion, Mr. Chair?
You're a long way from that.
Are you looking kidding?
No, no, I'm not. I'm just trying to. It's just kind of a joke. I'm sorry. I guess you can joke.
This is not a fair share.
Okay, right.
This is not the right
thing. I thought I heard Senator Schrader fall on a, off a.
Oh, I'm sure he hit the door.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I thought your question was a good one. And. But not just being a new member on Ways and Means, it's a good question to ask for any member of Ways and Means to be asking. Is that appropriate? And sometimes people have been thrown on the carpet for spending money and then coming here and getting permission to do it. So, but this is a little different than, you know, like sometimes they'll spend a federal grant and then come back and say, well, we needed permission to spend the federal grant.
I mean, certainly the evidence is there that we have a physician shortage. So I don't think anyone could argue that. That's just the reality. So, Senator Devlin.
Just, I believe I have this perfectly clear now. But I just want to check with Mr. Bender. What would basically happen here, for instance, if you did have the expansion, is this biennium would cost you the 40.7. A future biennium, though, the 4 would drop off. That's a one-time. And the 7 would drop down to about 5.5.
Yes.
And then in the future, you'd have whatever adjustment there was to that based on cost. So, in fact, if you were funding the governor's recommendation, the total would drop by roughly 4. roughly $5.5 million in the future biennium.
Yes. Okay. Looking at the chart, if you're looking at the yellow page, actually what I've tried to do is not only for the class expansion, but for all of these programs that are in the co-chair's budget, look at the roll-up costs. And that's shown at the bottom of the yellow page. I did make one mistake, at least one mistake, that I think someone mentioned. That's with the MD class residency mix. I transposed the numbers in the 0709 in the roll-up column. It's really 1153 should be in the 0709, and the 1847 should have been in the roll-up. I apologize for that. I think all the other ones are correct. This is looking at all of these that are in the co-chair's budget. I really should redo this now because the numbers are not quite right in terms of the roll-up, but this shows that in 0911, the ongoing costs of these additional investments would be $12.5 million that are in the co-chair's budget.
Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question for Mr. Bender. Given our figures that we've looked at here for the MD program, have we run similar sorts of calculations in relationship to the nursing program?
Yes.
Life programs?
Yes. Those are bought.
Yeah. Yes, and I won't go over that when we go into the school of nursing.
Yep, okay.
Should I do that, Mr.
Sounds
Chair?
Like a great segue.
Okay. Okay, again, going back to this sheet that's labeled post-secondary education overview, we've gone through the School of Medicine. The only thing I wanted to point before going on to the School of Nursing is that the co-chair's budget does increase the School of Medicine support by 20.1% over the prior biennium level. So it's a large increase over the prior biennium level of general fund support.
Is it 20.1 or 6?
20.6, I'm sorry.
No, sorry. I'm sorry.
Going on to the School of Nursing, let me begin by saying that there is no difference, or there are no differences, between the governor's budget and the co-chair's budget in terms of funding enhancements for the School of Nursing. Both budgets included about $5.6 million in general fund above the essential budget level to fund expansion in various nursing degree programs. In terms of the School of Nursing, there are four of these. The first is to implement and to continue the expansion that's been occurring in the number of nursing degree programs under the Oregon Consortium for Nursing Education. There's about $1.7 million in the co-chair's budget for this purpose. And the way that this program works is as follows. I hope I have this correct, and I hope someone will make a face or something if I say anything wrong here. But OHSU currently offers baccalaureate degrees in nursing. The recipients of these degrees will typically become licensed as RNs. And these are offered on four campuses currently, at the main campus in Portland, and then on satellite campuses at Southern Oregon University, Eastern Oregon University, and the Oregon Institute of Technology. What this $1.7 million is designed to do is it's designed to support the capability of OHSU to offer an additional 100 baccalaureate degrees in nursing per year for students that are not located at least all the time on these four campuses. These would be students who are located on community college campuses. I think that they may occasionally need to travel to one of the four campuses for some of their coursework. I'm not sure, but essentially they will not need to enroll in one of the four campuses. They will still be able to get, though, a Bachelor of Science in Nursing degree from OHSU, even though they're not on those campuses. This will expand the capacity of the number of nursing graduates by this 100 per year when it is fully phased in.
By how many?
100 graduates per year. The second expansion that is funded in both budgets and is funded at the level of $1.467 million, is to expand the number of nursing degrees that are offered on the four existing campuses, and to expand the total by 50 per year. And the cost to do that, which is funded in the co-chair's budget, is $1.467 million. There's also, skipping now to the fourth row here of the School of Nursing on this list, skipping over the third one for now, there's also funding in the governor's and co-chair's budget of $1.4 million to establish a fifth nursing campus for OHSU. And this would be at Western Oregon University. So there's $1.4 million to establish a fifth site that will graduate 27 nursing degrees, or would offer 27 nursing degrees per year when this expansion is fully phased in.
Let me ask a question.
Representative Morgan.
Mr. Bender, if you flip over to the white sheet and you look at the Western Oregon University line, the fourth one down in the first section, the cost, the annual support for FTE is about $17 million as opposed to just under 10, or $17,000 rather, as opposed to just under 10 for a student at another site, right around 10. Is part of this the startup costs of the program, and do you expect that after it's implemented that the costs will come in line?
I do not expect that the costs, to answer your last question first,
okay,
we do not have any indication that the costs will be reduced in the long term. The dollar amount that you see in this chart of $2,786,000 in biennial state support represents the amount that OHSU is requesting after the program is fully phased in. That's why I'm using that number and not the $1.4 million in the current budget to start that program up. So in the long term, the biennial state support would be roughly 2.8 million per biennium. The number of students served, I'm assuming for this calculation that I assume that all of the students would be resident students, because you would have 3 years of the nursing program at 27 per year, so there would be 81 nursing students at Western at any given time. And the calculation would come to 17,000. It is less also than the existing support for the students that already exist on all of the four campuses as they are now, of approximately 10,000 per student.
And so is an economy of scale issue that drives the cost?
I would ask OHSU to respond to this. They have seen this number, and they have some explanation for the difference in cost. This, though, is the math of what they have proposed what the cost per FTE would be.
Dr. Halleck or Dr. Robertson, would you care to please enlighten us?
Chairman Galizio and members of the committee, my name is Leslie Halleck, provost at OHSU. The capitation model that looks at the cost per student, total cost, and then what component of that the state pays, takes into account the students on all four existing campuses. And that's where the 10,000 figure, the first line on that piece of paper, comes from. That was data collected in fiscal year 05, in 2004, 2005. But when we look at the actual costs, of course, in the current year, they're a little bit higher. But more importantly, when we look at the actual costs on the regional campuses, it is an economy of scale question. The direct costs on the eastern campus for the same number of students, literally 82, is 1.425 as opposed to the 1.445, so they were within 20,000 for the total. So the regional campuses per student do cost a little bit more per student because you have to put the whole nursing curriculum together for a smaller number. What we do is we combine those with the Portland campus, which is much larger, and we provide some of the infrastructure from Portland, but we look at the average cost overall. And bit of data over the last 15 years, what we've done is we've preferentially protected the regional campus enrollment, in fact grown it quite a bit, even though that cost is greater on those campuses just because of the need, trying to support as much as we can from the Portland campus where we have greater economies of scale. I hope that helps. But the cost at Western in the out years of the second biennium is exactly the same as it is in LeGrand and Southern. It's a little more than the first biennium because of setup costs.
So just, if I might, Mr.
Sure.
Chair, just to make sure I'm getting this, the cost at Western is going to reflect the cost at Eastern and Southern and OIT over time. It will, okay.
Thank you. In the second biennium, it's identical.
Dr. Halleck, we have numbers here, but I just want to make sure that they correspond to what I think they correspond to. On the central campus, OHSU, how many nursing students do you have?
I don't have that number in my head. Enrollment's probably 400 undergrad.
And so, like on Eastern, you'd have like similar to this. You'd have about
40
80.
Per class.
See, on resident on campus, you'd have. You only have about 80 students there.
Yes, we're in the process of converting from the 2-year curriculum to a 3-year curriculum.
Okay.
So it's a little confusing right now, but yes, we have about 80 students there right now.
Okay. So, really, your economies of scale at the central campus are very significant. But, well, I guess it might be anticipated, but it would seem that each one of these satellites, which if you had, there's some of the curriculum that you can probably provide via other means, online means, not online, I'm not talking about somebody taking a multiple choice test, but they can actually be talking to a nursing faculty member but you really have to have a core of faculty still there at the site.
Chairman Luizio, Senator Devlin, that's exactly right. There are large components of the curriculum that you have to do on-site. We do have some components provided at a distance, and in fact, even from the regional campuses, for example, the Southern campus, we have a lot of expertise in aging. So some parts of the curriculum will be provided from Southern to the other campuses. So we generally try and do that, but there's a core competency set that you have to teach on-site. That makes the cost per student a little more. The other thing is that there really is a difference in time here between the numbers. The capitation number is from 04-05, so there is also some inflationary increase.
Okay. Is it possible to get that breakout per institution, what the actual cost is in each one of those sites? Not that we're going to change anything, but just for sake of comparison.
I'm sorry, would you say again?
The actual cost of each one of those sites, if you were to...
Right now...
Just for the sake of comparison.
Sure. Right now, the cost per student at OIT is actually slightly less than Southern or Eastern, and that's because we are operating the OIT campus basically from the administration at the Southern campus. We have a single Southern, we call it Southern administration, so that if you took that and only applied it to Southern, there's a slightly lower cost. We did that as an economy at one point. I guess the one additional thing my boss just suggested I mention, that in case that wasn't clear, and I know Mr. Bender is aware of this, the overall school of nursing budget, which is how we derive this capitation, is pretty heavily subsidized by the health system. So the gap in funding is actually provided by the institution.
Mr. Chairman, this is not a policy committee. This is a witness committee, but I would actually like to have... I would like to ask Dr. Halleck. Obviously, there's not an alternative, but is there a benefit of educating nurses on a regional basis, of keeping them in those areas?
Representative Glizio, Chairman Glizio, and Senator Devlin, the benefit that's most immediately obvious is the access to the opportunity for the students in the region, but also the distribution of ultimate graduates. If you look at the graduates from Eastern, most of them provide nursing care in Eastern Oregon. And so if you bring an 18-year-old to Portland, a lot of them don't go back. And so it's really a question of serving the region's need for health care providers that is the advantage.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think also, Dr. Halleck, there's an issue of being able to maximize the potential of the system just from a body count point of view, too, that if you were going to try to bring all these people and educate them at the Portland campus, you'd have severe restrictions just because of the space that you would be able to dedicate to this.
Representative Morgan, that's absolutely true, and particularly in the clinical training years where the capacity of the health systems to provide training is strapped. That's when the regionalization in medicine came into our thought processes to expand into health systems in other areas.
Thank you very much. Did you have a question?
Well, I have a comment.
Representative
Dr. Halleck said, I concur with her observation, at least as far as Eastern, and I suspect as far as Southern is concerned too, there happens to be a need for, and probably the need in Eastern and Southern Oregon, and I don't know, maybe I don't know, on thin ice on this, but the need in Eastern Oregon is probably greater than the need in the metro areas here in the valley on a, per capita sort of basis. And if our students had to go to the valley for this education, the likelihood of them returning to Eastern Oregon is maybe not nearly as great as if they get their training there, because many of the people who take the training are, and quite frankly, at least there was a few years ago, a whole lot of single parents, that were taking this, and And they were just fitting back into their environment, sort of thing. And if you go the other way with it, why, at least I would be inclined to be objectionable to it on the basis that I would see our supply of nurses dwindling pretty rapidly.
Thank you, Representative Jensen.
All right, shall we move forward?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I think people have been already looking at the sheet that calculates the annual support per FTE. Again, for the programs that expand the number of baccalaureate nursing degrees, those three are shown at the top of that sheet: the OCNU expansion, the expansion of the 50 students at the OHSU four existing campuses, and the establishment of an additional campus at Western. The other item in both the co-chairs and the governor's budget that is funded for nursing involves expanding the number of students in the Masters of Nursing program, and more specifically, to expand the number of students that are in the Masters program relating to the Masters of Nursing and Nursing Education component of that. That is to say, the number of students who are in programs designed for degrees in nursing education, where upon the receipt of their degree, they would be qualified to teach nursing at a community college, generally at a community college. So that would expand the number of students by 20 per year. Since this is a two-year program, that would represent a 40-year expansion in the number of graduate degree students at the nursing school once it's fully phased in. And there's some information there on the cost per student.
Can I ask a question on that one for you? Those students, though, they would be qualified as well, though, to practice as well.
I believe so. Yes.
Well, it depends.
It depends. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Depends on sort of their specialization within that program.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the reason I'm asking questions is because there's no doubt there's a shortage of nurses to teach the courses. I mean, that's a huge problem. And that's the purpose of this is to expand the number of people that can teach courses to people getting degrees in nursing. So I guess my question is, we have those 20, you know, expand that by 20, and I wonder how many of those will actually become educators and how many of them will become practicing nurses or, I mean, I guess you can't, there's no way to know that.
Leslie's got an opinion.
Yes, can you?
I don't know what she went back
for. I apologize. At the graduate level, these are students who are already RN prepared, so they certainly could practice. But at the graduate level, when they go back for a graduate degree, there are tracks. Some lead to nurse practitioners where they would practice at an advanced level. We've started a new track in nursing education, which, you know, we would like to encourage students to take. Now, we can't dictate that, and some may elect to go a different route. Today, lots of master's prepared graduates teach in the community colleges, and this track doesn't exist, but we designed it specifically to encourage people to go into teaching. So depending on which track they took, they might be an independent practitioner, but we've done what we can to try and incentivize the pipeline into teaching with this special educational track.
So is it possible we fund this and we create these 20, you know, capacity for 20, but you don't get that many students doing this? I guess, you know what I'm saying?
We have more demand right now than we can accommodate, and we really have a large applicant pool, again, in the graduate program, so we're constrained by capacity there, too. So unlike 5-10 years ago, applicant pools are not rate-limiting at all at either graduate or undergraduate level.
But is the demand, don't they want to be nurse practitioners, or... Do you know whether the demand is? Oh, I want to teach courses. Or you?
We're it's an educated guess, to be honest. But in fact, there is a demand to go into teaching. There's a desire to go into teaching. We have a lot of practicing nurses, especially with significant experience, who frankly find it stressful to work 12-hour days in an ICU and are looking for teaching opportunities. And right now, there isn't a track designed just for them to go into teaching, and that's what this would capture. So it's partly taking advantage of a workforce.
Thank you very much.
Hope it works.
Mr. Chair? That's about $1 million. $1,008,000 is what is in the co-chair's budget for the master's program expansion. The total amount in the co-chair's budget for the School of Nursing represents a 39.5% increase over the prior biennium level. So it's a big increase there. The next area of the budget that includes additional funding under the co-chair's budget is for the Area Health Education Centers program. The co-chairs include in their budget $80,000 to expand the AHEC K-12 student health career programs. The AHECs have a number of functions, and one of their functions is to introduce students in the K-12 system to what some of their options would be if they pursue a career in healthcare, in order to help get more students interested and hopefully alleviate some of the provider shortfalls. And OHSU requested and the governor funded an $80,000 expansion of funding to help supplement the activities in the K-12 student healthcare career programs. And those funds are included in the co-chair's budget. I think it's necessary to, when talking about AHEC, to also mention some of the things that were included in the governor's budget but are not included in the co-chair's budget. There's an additional amount of more than $1.4 million that is not in the co-chair's budget, but that OHSU requested and the governor supported to help expand the other functions of AHEC, which include, among other things, educating students and practitioners at locations in rural areas where they work, and bringing students out
to school.
Which one are
we
going to do? You can recess. I don't know how long you think it'll take.
Or should we just keep going?
I believe we need this room at 4:45 for a full committee meeting. So we really don't have an option of extending this meeting after 4:30.
Are you suggesting?
Maybe we should
Okay, I think we have a call. I think we're just going to stop for today and then just continue tomorrow. So apologies.
Thank you.
Okay, so with that, we are...